the Australian people have long since believed that it is time for marriage equality.
Love is love, unless you disagree. You can say no. Coalition for Marriage.
Hi, my name's Amelia. I'm volunteering for the Yes campaign for marriage equality.
Costs $122 million bloody dollars.
This is a vote about the lives and dignity of real people.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Egypt's rainbow flag crackdown balloons into mass arrests and a media blackout. Trump triples down on opposition to LGBTQ rights. And polls predict equality in Australia's postal marriage plebiscite. All that and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 7th, 2017. What began in Egypt with the detention of seven people for waving a rainbow flag at a concert by the Lebanese alternative rock band Mashru Leila, whose lead singer is openly gay, has mushroomed into mass arrests and a nationwide media ban on all things LGBT. More than 60 people have reportedly been taken into custody in the past week, several in their own homes. Many of the men have had to endure torturous and humiliating forced anal exams that authorities mistakenly believe provide proof of homosexual activity. Egypt's Supreme Council for Media Regulation issued an edict on October 6th calling same-gender love a sickness and banning the appearance of homosexuals or their slogans in any media outlet, whether written, audio, or visual, except when they acknowledge the fact that their conduct is inappropriate and repent for it. Human Rights Watch issued a statement through its Middle East and North Africa director, Sarah Leah Whitson, condemning this vicious crackdown on a vulnerable group simply for waving a flag. Repression will not turn gay people straight. It will only perpetuate fear and abuse, she wrote. There's no possible objective or scientific reason to throw people in prison simply because of their sexuality. Same-gender sex is not specifically illegal in Egypt, but periodic crackdowns over the past several years use laws against immorality, inciting sexual deviancy, or debauchery to prosecute and imprison gay people. Mashru Leila joined this week's chorus of condemnation, charging in a statement that this crackdown is by no means separable from the suffocating atmosphere of fear and abuse experienced by all Egyptians on a daily basis, regardless of their sexual orientation.
In another of the world's queer hotspots, victims of the mass arrests of gay people in Azerbaijan that we first reported 2 weeks ago have detailed the depth of the abuse. One of the country's leading queer rights groups posted a statement on its Facebook page this week from one of the detainees, identified only as Hassan, who said that authorities beat him, falsely accused him of being a sex worker, and demanded information about his alleged clients. A joint statement from the Interior Ministry and Prosecutor General of the former Soviet Republic seemed to confirm that most or all of the detainees were accused of prostitution. It said that the 83 people arrested in the last 2 weeks of September were charged with offering unsolicited sexual services, violating public order, and spreading infectious diseases. The statement claimed that 32 of the detainees were diagnosed with various STDs, including HIV/AIDS. Homosexuality was decriminalized in Muslim-majority Azerbaijan in 2000, but discrimination and mistreatment of sexual and gender minorities are commonplace. An attorney said to be coordinating legal representation for those arrested told the Associated Press that at least 46 people have already been sentenced to between 10 and 30 days in jail for charges that included resisting arrest.
In happier news, lesbian and gay couples began getting hitched in Germany on October 1st when the country's marriage equality legislation took effect. Couples in existing civil partnerships that were originally created for them in 2001 also began converting those partnerships to marriage. The first marriage equality bill was introduced in the German parliament in 2000, the long and winding road to equality for one of Western Europe's last holdouts, finally came in June when Chancellor Angela Merkel surprisingly ended her 12 years of resistance to allowing a free vote on the issue by her party MPs, thus assuring passage. She later revealed that meeting a lesbian couple who had successfully fostered 8 children changed her mind about allowing the free vote. Merkel herself, who said she still had a hard time with it, voted no. The marriage equality legislation also extends joint adoption rights to same-gender couples.
The Scottish Episcopal Church has joined the U.S. Episcopal Church in being sanctioned by the Global Anglican Communion for marrying same-gender couples. The Scottish Episcopal Church clergy and laity each voted overwhelmingly earlier this year to bless same-gender unions after civil marriage became legal in the country. Speaking to reporters this week, Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby, the titular leader of the communion, confirmed that a primates meeting had decided to sanction the Scottish Church by barring their leaders from participating in important Anglican communion events, similar to sanctions imposed on the U.S. Episcopals in 2016 for consecrating openly gay and partnered Bishop Gene Robinson and subsequently conducting church weddings for same-gender couples. The mostly queer-friendly Anglican congregations in North America and Western Europe have been at odds for years with what's called the Global South, branches of the church in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. Global South leaders are generally biblical literalists who oppose any rights for LGBT people and any role for them in the church. Despite repeated concessions to those hardliner conservatives, the Anglican Communion has been slowly disintegrating for several years, and it seems unlikely that the widening divide between North and South will ever be resolved.
The administration of Republican U.S. President Donald Trump virtually declared war on LGBT people this week with religious freedom proposals that critics call licenses to discriminate, a reversal of the Obama Justice Department's assertion that LGBT people are protected from discrimination by federal civil rights laws, and doubling down on Trump's order to banish transgender people from the U.S. armed forces. Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memorandum on October 6th instructing Justice Department lawyers to honor claims of religious freedom violations over any civil rights claims by LGBT people, women, and others, writing that religious observance and practice should be reasonably accommodated in all government activity. Analysts say that the memo, supposedly an effort to protect the rights of people who oppose marriage equality on religious grounds, is so sweeping that it could allow not only individuals and businesses claiming that their faith compels them to deny service to LGBT people or anyone else they don't like, but government workers, public institutions, and even prisons. In a related but separate action this week, the Health and Human Services Department announced that more employers with religious objections to contraception would now be allowed under the Affordable Care Act to exclude birth control coverage. Expect a number of lawsuits to challenge both policy changes.
The Attorney General also solidified the DOJ's previously expressed policy position this week that existing federal law does not protect transgender people from discrimination. The Obama administration and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission argued in federal court cases for several years that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans discrimination based on sex, implicitly protects people from bias based on sexual orientation and gender identity. All three federal appeals courts that have considered the issue over the last two decades have ruled that bias against transgender workers is unlawful. A memo sent by Sessions to U.S. attorneys on October 4th insists that Title VII only bans bias based on biological gender and does not protect LGBT people. Sessions also reversed Obama-era guidelines earlier this year that protected transgender students.
Several lawsuits have already been filed against the Trump administration's plan to deny U.S. military service to transgender people. The Justice Department filed its first response this week in one case before the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. The 44-page brief insists that the president has the power to set military policy as commander-in-chief and compares the ban on transgender service to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that banned service by openly LGB people. Federal courts consistently upheld that policy until Congress finally repealed it. The conclusions of Pentagon studies a year ago prompted the Obama administration to support service by transgender enlistees and new recruits. But there were reports this week that Defense Secretary James Mattis is moving ahead with plans to implement Trump's total ban, including the expulsion of currently serving transgender troops, following the ongoing 6-month Defense Department study revisiting the issue.
But finally, a transgender man in Botswana has won a 10-year battle to be legally recognized as male. The country's high court ordered the government this week to change the gender marker on his identity card from female to male. The justices ruled that officials had violated the plaintiff's rights to dignity, privacy, equality, freedom of expression, and freedom from discrimination and inhumane and degrading treatment. The man's identity is being kept secret for legal reasons, and probably for his own protection. Sexual and gender minorities can be jailed for up to 7 years in the Southern African country for unnatural offenses, and prejudice and abuse is routine. This is the Botswana government's second loss at the High Court in a queer-related case in recent years. The justices ordered officials to recognize and register an LGBT rights group as a non-governmental agency in 2014. In an understatement about the landmark ruling this week following his victorious 10-year legal battle, the unnamed trans man called it an immense relief.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 7th, 2017, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Yater.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website lately?
For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show,
log on to
thiswayout.org.
Hi, my name is John. I'm from the Labour Campaign for Marriage Equality. We're just wondering to see whether you've already voted in the postal plebiscite.
In hopes of hearing wedding bells, Australian activists are ringing doorbells for a victory in the marriage equality postal plebiscite. We've got an update on the progress of the campaign from Sydney correspondent Barry McKay. But first, let's send the queer campaigners down under some encouraging words. Here's a Rainbow Minute doubleheader celebrating the first legal marriages of same-gender couples in Spain and South Africa.
Tying the Knot in Spain, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Emilio Menendez, a Spaniard, and Carlos German, an American, became the first gay couple to be married in Spain since the country's parliament passed a law legalizing such unions in July of 2005. A store window decorator and psychiatrist, respectively, they hugged each other, exchanged rings, and were declared united in matrimony. After the 10-minute civil ceremony, Menendez said, "We're normal people who love each other and want to be happy. The happiest day of our lives was when we fell in love with each other. We've been together for 30 years. There have been many wonderful days. Today is yet another wonderful day." Pedro Zirolo, a Spanish equal rights activist, called their marriage a triumph of common sense and the state of law. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Bill Lupoletti.
Out and Married in South Africa, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. After having been together for 9 years, Vernon Gibbs and Tony Halls became the first gay couple to legally wed in South Africa on December 1st, 2006. Wearing their Game Ranger outfits, they exchanged rings and were pronounced a married couple, with friends and curious onlookers present in the small hall. A year earlier, a decision by the Constitutional Court required the new marriage law. It went into effect the day before their historic wedding. Gibbs said the marriage gives them greater legal protection as well as better medical aid and pension benefits. But, practicality aside, he said, marriage means a lifetime commitment. It means to cherish, obey, love, honor. It means through sickness and health. All those relevant words I never thought would be for me. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Alan Brown.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
It's looking good, it's looking good, it's looking good, it's looking good, it's looking good.
Veteran activists will say it's never wise to count your ballots before they hatch, but things seem to be looking very good indeed for the Yes campaign in Australia's marriage equality postal survey. 57.5% of all paper ballots sent out had been returned by last week, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which is running the poll, and that's already a higher number than expected. Although the ballots will not be counted until November, the Rupert Murdoch-owned Sky News TV channel conducted a poll of around 5,000 respondents. The encouraging results came in on October 2nd.
What we can show you now is a poll that is without doubt the strongest indication that Australia will overwhelmingly vote yes. More than 64% have sent back their ballot already, and they have voted yes. That's huge. That's in landslide territory, and that indicates this campaign may have already been won. 15.5% have sent back their forms already with a no vote. If that indeed is the result on November 15, it's a pathetic outcome for the no campaign. A further 6% still plan to vote yes, and roughly the same amount still plan to vote no, which, if they follow through on that, would take us to around 70% voting yes and 21% voting no. A small number, less than 6%, aren't going to participate. And just under 3% haven't received a ballot at all. 68% of those aged 51 to 64 have already voted yes, according to this survey. That's the strongest age demographic to have already voted yes. The next strongest is those aged 65 and over. Those aged 35 to 50 are close behind, followed by the 18 to 35-year-olds. So forget the theory that young Australians would be driving the yes vote. It's actually right across the board, but particularly amongst those aged over 50 who are driving the yes vote. Maybe they know how to find the postbox.
Those demographics from Sky News TV's poll are surprising and the results sound great. But This Way Out correspondent Barry McKay takes a closer look at the campaign in the news and on the ground to see if the optimism is well-founded.
With things looking very hopeful, Yes campaign leader Tiernan Brady said on Sky News that although the figures looked encouraging, the Yes campaign had not yet claimed victory.
The figures are really good in terms of turnout, and we know that there are a million more votes in the post service waiting to go to the office. But there's no room for complacency. There are still millions of votes out there, and the rest of this campaign, we will not give up any single day making sure that everybody out there knows how important this is. This is a vote about the lives and dignity of real people. It's a simple, straightforward question, but it's an incredibly important one, which will have a profound positive change on the lives of so many Australians. So there's no complacency from this campaign. The Yes Equality campaign will continue on full speed because we want every single vote cast so that we can have a survey that reflects the values of the Australian people, who have long since believed that it is time for marriage equality.
Undoubtedly, one of the highlights of the past couple of weeks was American rap singer Macklemore, with Mary Lambert performing Same Love at the National Rugby League Grand Final in Sydney on the 1st of October, which was televised to a huge national audience. Sport arguably has more fervent followers per head of population in Australia than religion in the United States. Macklemore will be donating the Australian earnings of his song to the Yes campaign.
Swimming with the fear, underneath it's all the same love. About time that we raise the
Although conservative politicians had voiced their opposition to the song being performed at the grand final, it was generally well received by sports fans, and it was reported on Twitter and Facebook that at various pubs and clubs around Australia where the broadcast was screened, patrons booed at the No campaign ad which followed Macklemore and Lambert's performance. The No campaign ads have become more hate-focused. The latest Coalition for Marriage ad first appeared on Facebook the day before the grand final, laden with visuals of Facebook and Twitter text slurs which opponents of the No campaign had sent their direction. For the convenience of listeners, I'll read the text from the ad. Love is love. I genuinely hope someone kicks your teeth in. What a bunch of homophobic maggots. You prehistoric bigots. You sad, sad people. Utter clowns. You are disgusting. What a disgrace. You should be ashamed. Homophobic bigot. 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 Love is love, unless you disagree. You can say no. Coalition for Marriage. Perhaps on a more comedic note, Sydney-based veteran anti-LGBTIQ campaigner Fred Nile, whose activism goes right back to the 1980s in the early days of the Sydney lesbian and gay Mardi Gras, commented on the 4th of October that gays wanted to take over Australia with same love as their national anthem. Meanwhile, the door knocking and phone banking for the Yes campaign continues. I went out with a team of door knockers from the opposition Labor Party 2 weekends ago.
Hello. Hi, my name is John. I'm from the Labor campaign for marriage equality. We're just wondering to see whether you've already voted in the postal plebiscite.
Absolutely. Actually, every one of the 9 of us have voted. So.
That's fantastic. It's fantastic. And you've already got a little sticker there.
Yes,
too.
Actually, we've already got stickers. Yes.
And you've
yes.
all voted yes.
All of us voted yes. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
All 9 of us.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
No problem at all.
I also attended a phone banking session in the heart of Sydney last week, and many positive responses from those calls have also been reported.
Hi, my name's Amelia. I'm volunteering for the Yes campaign for marriage equality here in Sydney, and I'm making calls today to see if you support marriage equality. Oh, that's so great to hear. That's fantastic. So have you already voted in the postal survey?
An equality shop has been set up in the heart of Oxford Street, Sydney's gay golden mile, selling T-shirts, badges and giving out campaign posters and flyers to interested patrons. A wall of personal messages to Australia covers one side of the shop.
When people come in here, they all want to write messages about why marriage equality is important to them. And so we get them to write their own messages. It could be about their family members, it could be about their partner, it could be about their friends, their work colleagues. And we want them to write a personal message and put it on the wall, and they take photographs of it to just say how important this issue is to them and what
so
it means to them.
It's become a bit of a tourist attraction, hasn't it?
Yeah, we had a lot of Americans. I was in earlier this week and there were some guys from New York here, and we've had people from all over the world. And especially when they come to Sydney and to Oxford Street, you know, this is a bit of a talking point. They come in here and actually, you know, a lot of international people don't understand why we don't have marriage equality. So they come in here to find out why, and they want to support it as well. And they buy some souvenirs to take back home.
Former Labor Prime Minister Bob Hawke, who was in his leadership role in the 1980s, had some scathing words for the government at a talk at the National Press Club in Canberra on the 2nd of October.
It cannot produce a decision. It still requires a vote of the Parliament, whatever the result of the vote is. Costs $122 million bloody dollars. Can you imagine that a Prime Minister would make a decision in these stringent times, spending $122 million on a process that can't produce a result, when you could do so much to reduce the gaps, the Aboriginal people, education and so on? Without any question, the worst economic decision made by any Australian Prime Minister.
All remaining unposted ballots will need to be returned by the 7th of November, and the results will be announced on the 15th of November. If, as it would appear, the yes vote is in by an overwhelming margin, the government will then seek to legislate a bill in Parliament for the introduction of same-sex marriage in Australia. Senator Matthias Cormann spoke on the ABC's Drive program on the 3rd of October about the high participation rate in the postal survey.
I think it's not too optimistic to predict that we'll get well past 60%, hopefully we'll get past 70%. But whatever the final number, I think it is very clear now that we will have a very credible participation right when it's all said and done, and that the final outcome, the verdict of the Australian people through this process, will have a great authority, and the Parliament, of course, will act accordingly.
The exact details of the proposed bill are yet to be debated. There has been much discussion in the press as to the preservation of religious freedoms, an issue close to the No campaign's heart, and also especially with the conservative side of politics. Former arch-conservative Prime Minister John Howard, who sent troops to support George Bush's 2003 war in Iraq, took out a full-page ad in the Rupert Murdoch-controlled News Limited newspapers across the nation last week, calling for Australians to vote no to preserve religious freedoms, amongst other conservative values. However, critics of the postal survey have said that there has been room for tampering and fraud, and this could be raised by either side of the campaign once the result is announced. Catherine Murphy, political editor of the Guardian Australia newspaper, commented on this on ABC Radio on the 18th of September.
It's hard to say how big the problems are at this point, because obviously it's just a bunch of anecdotes, but it is worrying, and I can predict with a certain amount of confidence that this will be used once a vote is cast in order to raise questions about whether or not that vote is legitimate.
The result will be, and the campaign has certainly been, a milestone for the LGBTIQ community in Australia, which has found itself being cast in the unexpected role of a political football. The same-sex marriage postal survey will also be remembered in Australian history as one of the major news stories for the second half of 2017. I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney for This Way Out.
And this just in, the campaign against marriage equality in Australia has gotten a shot in the arm from two powerful conservative sources. Archbishop Glenn Davies announced October 9th that the Anglican Diocese of Sydney had donated $1 million to promote a no vote. According to local queer activists, support for the No campaign is also coming from the U.S., including Republican-linked companies like the one that built apps for Donald Trump's presidential campaign and the National Rifle Association. If you missed Barry McKay's interview with queer activist mediator Anthony Venn Brown on how to survive a plebiscite, you can see the video of their whole conversation at thiswayout.org. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week's program material came from John Dyer V and Michelle Yeader, produced by Steve Pride, Bill Lapuetti and Alan Brown, produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Barry McKay. The Ruddles performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2MTM Coonamble, New South Wales, Free Radio Edmonton, Edmonton, Alberta, KPFT, Houston, Texas, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all stay tuned.